Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. If you've been following the channel, you'll know that we've been talking a lot about FTX and the collapse of the company that was valued in January of 2022 at $32 billion and is now virtually worthless. And as we wait to find out the full details of exactly what's happened and work out exactly how much money is going to be given back to all of the investors and the customers of FTX, there are a lot of accusations flying around that this was a scam, that Sam Bankman-Fried basically built a fraud of a company. And in today's episode, I want to discuss whether or not there is a possibility that this whole business was a scam. And to do that, I wanted to go through the seven ingredients of a scam. If you've got an idea and you're looking to create a scam, the seven things that you will need to do to build up investor and customer confidence to be able to get away with billions of dollars of profit. So we'll go through the seven ingredients and we'll look at some of the most famous scams in history and compare what they did to what FTX was doing and see what comparables there are between FTX and all of the famous scams of the past. And once we've been through the seven ingredients of a scam, we'll then look at the acid test that tells us whether or not this is a legitimate company or indeed a fraudulent scam. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summaries to what I think the situation is for FTX. So before we get started on all of that, if I can ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters. So if you don't have time to watch the whole video, you can skip through things. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube, super thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me A Coffee, Patreon and Amazon shopping links. And once again, thank you so much to everyone that has supported the channel. Really, really appreciate it. So the first ingredient for a really good scam is to have a revolutionary idea. Come up with something that nobody's ever thought of before, that looks like it's changing the world, that's going to be a fantastic way to do business for the future. And the vast majority of the most successful scams in history had this at their core. They came up with some way of doing something that nobody had ever thought of before, that became a revolution. So the oldest and one of the most famous was the South Sea Company, which was a British company that was created back in 1711. And this company was given exclusive rights to all of the British trade in the South Seas and South America. And because the British Empire had its tentacles into a lot of different parts of the world, everybody saw this as a fantastic opportunity that this company would have complete dominance over the area and would make a lot of profit. But of course, the South Seas and South America were not somewhere that Britain had any real strongholds. They were completely dominated by Spain and Portugal at the time. So this company really didn't have any substance and wasn't ever going to make any money. But despite that, the share price rose from around £1 per share to around £10 per share in a very short space of time. So this was the first share bubble that had ever been seen in the world. And when that bubble burst and the share price came crashing back down, everybody that had bought shares on the way up lost an absolute fortune. And of course, back in the 1700s, due diligence had barely been invented. So nobody really did any research or looked into what the South Sea Company was going to do. They just saw that the share price was going up and everybody wanted to buy. There was a buying frenzy. And all of those people got their fingers very badly burned. And another great example of a company that had a revolutionary idea that was going to change the world was Theranos. And this is the company created by Elizabeth Holmes, and she claimed that she'd invented a machine that could do a variety of different blood tests by only using a finger prick's worth of blood. So this was going to revolutionize the whole of the healthcare market. You could put one of these machines into every pharmacy on every street corner, and you could test for cancer and leukemia and diabetes and anything that you could think of. And like the South Sea Company, the valuation of Theranos grew dramatically and hit a peak of around $9 billion. But the main problem that both Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos had was that this was a complete lie. The machine didn't actually do any of the things that they claimed it did. And once that was brought to light, the company collapsed, Elizabeth Holmes was arrested, and she was recently sentenced to over 11 years in prison. So those two companies are great examples of how a revolutionary idea can put your company front and center and give you the opportunity to make a lot of money. So the question here is, did FTX have a revolutionary idea? Did they come up with something that nobody else had ever thought of before? Well, Sam Bankman-Fried didn't have a unique idea. FTX wasn't the first company to offer an exchange where you can buy and sell cryptocurrencies. but it was one of the first movers. So it came into a market that was growing very rapidly, where there was a lot of demand and excitement. And cryptocurrency is a relatively new and revolutionary concept. And Sam Bankman-Fried capitalized on that new idea by offering the mainstream market a way of being able to enter that market. So it wasn't revolutionary in terms of it wasn't the only company that was offering it, but it was one of a very small number. And what Sam Bankman-Fried did well is that he scaled up FTX and he made it into something that looked very credible and attractive to the man in the street. So it was relatively revolutionary from that perspective. And he had first mover advantage along with a small number of other companies that were starting out at the same time. So I think we can tick the box in saying this was a relatively revolutionary concept and idea. It wasn't unique, but it was one of a small number of companies that offered this idea of crypto to a wider market. The second key ingredient you need if you're going to create a successful business from scratch is to have a massive market opportunity, a fast-growing, huge market that you can tap into and therefore make billions of dollars in profit in theory. And a great example of a company that capitalized on a fast-growing market is WorldCom, that was created by a guy called Bernard Ebbers and operated in the telco market at the end of the 1990s. As technology developed and we moved into both mobile telecommunication and the internet at the same time. So there was a huge expanding market and WorldCom was seen as being at the forefront of that expanding market. And at one point, it was the fifth largest company in the whole of the USA. And it was growing through a number of acquisitions. So WorldCom was going around buying up every single other telecommunication business it could find to become the dominant market player. But what seemed like a fantastic company from the outside was actually a shell from the inside and wasn't making any profit and was continuing to make these acquisitions really to hide the fact that it was incurring huge losses. And when that all came to light, the company collapsed and Bernard Ebbers was arrested and spent the rest of his life in prison. So in terms of FTX, we can definitely tick the box on a fast-growing market with huge potential future demand. It's forecast by a lot of commentators to be the future of payments, to decentralize everything, move away from the established financial world into the world of blockchain. So this does have enormous potential. And investors love that sort of thing. Their appetite for exponential growth and therefore exponential profits is never-ending. So FTX definitely ticks the box in terms of market. The next ingredient for a successful scam is to have a charismatic lead person, somebody who can front up the business, who's iconic, who's seen as being a bit of a legend in their field. And we've got numerous examples of charismatic individuals who fronted up their companies that for a short period of time, everybody bought into. So great examples of this are Bernie Madoff, Charles Ponzi, and Elizabeth Holmes. Now, Bernie Madoff started his investment company in the 1960s and built it to be one of the largest Ponzi schemes in the history of finance. At its peak, it was valued at $64 billion. That was the amount of money that he took from gullible investors. And the problem that Bernie Madoff had was that it didn't actually have any investments. He wasn't putting the money into anything. All he was doing was using customers' money to pay other customers. So it was a case of left pocket, right pocket, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And he got away with this for around 30 years. It was incredible that nobody managed to rumble this scheme. And Bernie Madoff was seen as being one of the highest respected financiers on Wall Street for a long period of time. He was so well respected that he was actually appointed as the chairman of NASDAQ. So this is just incredible for somebody that had no business substance at all in his entity. But he was so charismatic and believable that everybody thought that it was all going to be fine. And Charles Ponzi had similar charismatic characteristics. People believed what he said, mainly because they wanted to, because Ponzi and Madoff were offering such incredible returns that people wanted to believe them. They wanted to believe it was true. So they convinced themselves to ignore those creeping suspicions at the back of their mind that this was actually too good to be true. They wanted it to be true. They had these people that were really believable and likable, and therefore they handed over all of their life savings. Just incredible. And Elizabeth Holmes that I mentioned earlier is also somebody that's really credible because she personally fronted up Theranos and was seen to be an iconic leader of her business. She was one of the youngest female billionaires ever and was seen to be a complete icon in the world of business. But of course, as I mentioned earlier, the whole concept was a complete fraud. So unfortunately, she went from being an icon to a complete pariah and is now in jail. So the question with regards to FTX is, did they have the same charismatic frontman as a lot of these other scams? Well, when you look at Sam Bankman-Fried, he had a very different flavour and persona to individuals like Madoff, Ponzi and Elizabeth Holmes. This was a guy who was a bit more understated. In a lot of his interviews, he would have a t-shirt and shorts on. So very, very laid back, very, very sort of relaxed culture. And it's famously reported that when he was doing some of the big deals with the venture capital companies, when he was negotiating on Zoom, he was playing computer games. So very, very different type of idea, but in line with the business that he was trying to promote. So this was a guy in his 20s who was seen to be a revolutionary in the new market of cryptocurrency. So this was a completely different way of dealing with business, and it needed somebody that had different characteristics. So the money men can buy into that idea. They can say, Sam Bankman-Fried, this is the way business is going. This guy does things completely differently to everybody else. So in his own way, he was seen as being iconic, because he wasn't doing the normal thing. He wasn't wearing a shirt and tie to meetings. He wasn't doing things formally. He was doing things in his own way. And that really ticked the box when you look at what was happening with FTX. So it sort of fitted the bill. Everybody bought into it. Nobody questioned that Sam Bankman-Fried didn't know what he was doing, didn't know how to run a company. Everybody just thought, this is a genius in his field, and we're happy to give him billions of dollars. The next ingredient, and probably the most important, is the need to be opaque, to make your business look really complicated so you can't really explain how it works to anybody else. It just does. It's just the magic within our business that makes so much profit. And if you can persuade people that that's true, then that means that you can take hundreds of millions of dollars off people without them really knowing what they're investing into. And that's exactly what a lot of really good scams in the past have managed to do. So Theranos is a brilliant example. A new invention that does all of these amazing blood tests that nobody can really explain. And if you look at some of the interviews that Elizabeth Holmes gave, it's really quite embarrassing now when she's trying to answer how this thing actually works. She deliberately doesn't give any tangible information as to how this works, how it actually achieves the objectives. She just glosses over all of the facts. And amazingly, people were happy to take that at face value. And Madoff Securities managed to pull this off with the regulators as well. So this wasn't just investors and customers. The regulators went into Madoff twice before it was uncovered that it was a fraud and managed to sign off on what was going on in the business, despite the fact that it wasn't actually investing into any products. So just incredible. But if you can create that mystique and oblique flavor and not let anybody see what's actually going on, then you've got the potential for your scam to run for a long period of time, because you never have to actually disclose what's happening. So the question is, does this apply to FTX? Well, I think when you look at the facts of what are coming out now from John Wray's investigation, I think it does, because nobody really knows what was going on at FTX. Everybody assumed that it was just an exchange, that people were buying and selling crypto on the exchange, and that FTX would be taking profit. But as you'll know if you followed my channel, I posted a number of videos where we've looked at what was going on with the finances of FTX, and the company actually posted a loss of $161 million in the first half of 2022, despite the fact that it had taken hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. So that doesn't really add up. And the reason that it was making losses is that Sam Bankman-Fried was doing a whole host of other things with the money and with the customers' money. So it's reported that a lot of that money was given over to Alameda Research. And it's also reported that Alameda Research was using that money to support the price of FTX's proprietary crypto coin, FTT. So this became a circular business relationship, because FTT, the coin, was the backbone of the FTX business. A lot of the customers had bought FTT, and so it was in FTX's interest to keep the price high. But as the price started to come down, Alameda Research was buying coins in the market to push the price back up. And so customer funds were being used to buy FTT coins at the time when the price was falling in the market, and it just became a whole mess. But nobody knew what was going on because the business model wasn't disclosed to anybody at that time. Sam Bankman-Fried had managed to create a mystique, an obliqueness over the business model so that nobody could really see where the money was going or what was happening. The next key ingredient, which is linked into the oblique business model, is to create a very complicated set of accounts so that nobody can really see what's going on from the figures that you're providing. And the classic example from the scams of the past is WorldCom. WorldCom operated in the field of telecommunications, which was a fast-growing market at the end of the 1990s. And in order to become a dominant player, WorldCom went around buying up lots and lots of companies all around the world. And that meant that they then had to integrate all of those other businesses into their accounts to create the WorldCom group. And this gave the accountants the perfect opportunity to be able to make the accounts as complicated as possible. And at that time, they decided to create new accounts where they could hide all of the losses that were being created as part of the scam. So they were able to bury losses into all sorts of different companies. And this became a myriad of different accounting businesses that was really difficult for anybody to work out. And Arthur Anderson, who were the accountants at the time for Enron, couldn't make head nor tail of what was going on. And rather than taking time to investigate it further and discovering that there were problems and that all of the cash was disappearing from the business, Arthur Anderson signed off on those accounts. And ultimately, when WorldCom went down and all of this scam was revealed, it also took Arthur Anderson down with it. So that company also became defunct because its reputation was entirely shot because they hadn't exposed any of the fraud that was going on within the business, mainly because it was so complicated to be able to work it out. It had been buried into all of the detail. Nobody could find out what was happening to the cash. Now, in terms of the FTX situation, if you've been following the channel, you'll know that from the papers that were filed as part of the bankruptcy, Sam Bankman-Fried had 134 different companies within the group. Now, this was a company that was only created in 2019. It was a complete newco. So unlike the WorldCom situation, which was a long-standing business that had been also buying lots of other entities, this should have been a complete clean slate from FTX's point of view. It should be a very simple structure. But from the papers that have been filed, it looks like it's been built to be deliberately complicated. 134 different companies is a lot of different entities. And added to that, FTX also had this very close relationship with Alameda Research, which was the business that Sam Bankman-Fried set up first to capitalize on differences between markets in crypto all around the world. So it's reported that money was moving from FTX to Alameda Research, and that Alameda Research were using that money to then buy FTT coins. So very, very circular relationship and getting very, very complicated. And as John Ray has discovered since he's been in charge of the business, there was very little in terms of record keeping, very little in terms of documented processes. So a lot of obliqueness in the accounts and a lot of complication. So this really does tick the box in terms of making sure that nobody really could tell what was going on, where the money was, and whether the company was making any profit. Now, the next key ingredient for a successful scam is to be able to raise money from investors at increasing valuations. And a great example of this is Theranos. Elizabeth Holmes managed to persuade a lot of really high-profile investors, including lots of celebrities, that her business was worth, at its peak, $9 billion. She managed to persuade a variety of investors, including the Walton family behind Walmart, Rupert Murdoch, and even Steven Spielberg, to put a combined total of over $700 million into a business that wasn't even real. Now, if we look at the FTX situation, there is a big tick in the box here. Sam Bankman-Fried managed to raise $1.8 billion, and the peak valuation that he achieved in January 2022 was $32 billion. So he persuaded a variety of really large investment vehicles, including Sequoia Capital and the Ontario Teachers Pension Fund, to put in hundreds of millions of dollars from their customer funds. Now, the final ingredient for a lot of successful scams is to be able to raise large amounts of money directly from customers, from consumers. This is how you can gather in a huge amount of cash. So the classic example here is Bernie Madoff. He set up his investment vehicle. It was the best investment in town. Everybody wanted a piece of the action. And to make it even more exciting for those investors, it was on an exclusive invitation basis only. So you weren't able to just put your money directly into Bernie Madoff's funds. You had to be invited to do so. And he personally had to authorize it. So this meant that it became even more interesting and attractive for those large investors who wanted to get on board. So this was a bit of magic created by Bernie Madoff. Obviously, it was a complete scam and a complete fraud. But his genius here was to really make it even more attractive by making it exclusive. And at its peak, it raised $64 billion from customers. Absolutely incredible. Massive amount. Now, when we look at FTX, obviously, they have direct access to customers because people who were buying and selling crypto on the FTX platform were leaving it in the customer wallets. So rather than just buying it and then tucking it away in a cold wallet, the vast majority of consumers who were using FTX were leaving it in the hot wallets, the digital wallets that FTX created. So this built up a large amount of customer funds. It was reported that prior to the problems being announced to the market, FTX had $16 billion of customer funds under management. $6 billion of that was withdrawn in a three-day period before the company went into Chapter 11 bankruptcy. So officially now the company should be sitting on $10 billion of customer funds. But obviously there is now a big question mark as to where has all that money gone, because John Ray has only been able to identify $1.24 billion so far. So we've got a shortfall of almost $9 billion of customer funds. But in terms of ticking the box, I think we can give a massive tick to FTX. They did have access to customer funds and therefore large amounts of capital flowed into the business. And unfortunately, that capital no longer seems to be in the company. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Is FTX a scam in the same way as a lot of the other companies that we've talked about in today's video? When you look at some of the businesses we've talked about in today's video, such as Theranos, Bernie Madoff, and Charles Ponzi, they actually didn't have a fundamental business model. They were scams from the outset. Theranos said that it had a revolutionary machine, when quite clearly it didn't. It was just a fraud. It was never going to work because it was based on something that didn't exist. And the same applies to both Madoff and Ponzi, because they were creating investment vehicles that weren't actually investing into anything that could provide returns. So ultimately, they were always going to be exposed as a scam, those businesses. They were fraudulent. Now, when you look at FTX, it did have a tangible business model because at its heart, it was a securities exchange. It was offering the opportunity to buy and sell crypto. And alongside that, you could hold that crypto in hot wallets on the FTX platform. So there is definitely a workable business model that has value at the heart of this company. So it wasn't a complete scam or fraud from the outset. But the bigger question here revolves around the customer funds. Why was FTX using the cash that customers had handed over to buy cryptocurrency and then hold in those digital wallets? For any reason whatsoever, FTX was not marketing itself as a crypto lender. So a lot of other businesses we've talked about, such as Voyager and BlockFi that have got into financial difficulty, they were lenders of crypto. So they were taking crypto from customers on deposit, lending it to other businesses. And those businesses were then using that crypto to try to make a profit. And those companies got themselves into difficulty because some of their assets got locked up on other exchanges. And therefore, you then have a liquidity crisis. But FTX were not doing that. So all of the money that the customers gave them should still be sitting in those digital wallets. But as we know from John Ray's initial findings, there's a shortfall of around $9 billion. So FTX were definitely doing something that they were not authorized to do with that money. And it's reported that it was given to Alameda Research, and then Alameda Research was doing things speculatively using that cash. And neither of those two things are part of the FTX business model. So this is where we're now starting to move into the question as to whether or not this is fraud, whether or not this is a scam. Did Sam Bankman-Fried set the business up with the intention of using those customer funds to do other things with, something with Alameda Research, something speculative that could risk all of that capital. And what it looks like right now today is that that capital, it has gone, it's disappeared, it's no longer there. So whatever was done with that money hasn't worked, it hasn't proved to be a success. And so the investigation has now started to track down how this happened. And what we're finding is that there's nothing in terms of record keeping or processes that's been documented by Sam Bankman-Fried. And that does raise a red flag in terms of whether or not this is fraudulent. Because if there's no record keeping, if there's no way of tracking down the cash, who authorized the transactions? Who made the trades? Where has the money gone? Who's incurred the losses? Where are the accounts? There should be bookkeeping entries to be able to track exactly where the missing $9 billion has gone to and who's got it. But it doesn't appear that any of that exists. And all of that does point to the fact that something untoward has been going on here, and it's starting to smell very fishy. So in terms of a summary, we can definitely say that FTX ticks the box in terms of meeting all of the seven categories of building a scam. The key question that we have to answer is, did Sam Bankman-Fried set out to deliberately do this? Was this something he had in mind from the start? Was this his master plan? Or was it something that developed as a result of the company making losses? Well, when you look at the business model, there is no reason why FTX should have been making losses, because if you're just taking commission from people buying and selling crypto, that is guaranteed profit. You can build up a really nice business doing that. And there are lots of legitimate exchanges that do exactly this. So the company shouldn't have been making losses. The fact that it's lost $9 billion does put a massive question mark as to whether or not this was part of a master plan. And it does raise the question as to whether Sam Bankman-Fried set out with the intention of gambling customer funds on speculative moves in the crypto markets. So as the investigation continues into FTX, I am sure we will get the answer to all of these questions. I'll keep you posted as soon as there's any news and developments on this or any other related stories. Hopefully you've enjoyed today's episode. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up, and thank you so much for watching this video all the way through to the end.